The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Amit Bori, co-founder and CEO of the Global Impact Investing Network, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving, on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
It was just over 10 years ago, at the Bellagio in Italy, that the Rockefeller Foundation and others first coined the term impact investing to describe a practice that was showing up around the world in different ways. So where has that movement been over the past decade, and where might it be going from here? Well, we have just the right person for you this evening to give us that story. He is Amit Bori, the co-founder and CEO of the Global Impact Investing Network, or GIN. Good evening, Amit, and welcome to The Business of Giving.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
For those who may be new to this space, and maybe even those who aren't that new but are a little confused because of how the term gets thrown around, what exactly is impact investing?
So impact investing came from a recognition that the way we were traditionally solving the world's problems, you know, through government efforts and philanthropy, alone was insufficient, you know, for the nature of inequality and climate change and all the other issues we're facing around the world. So many pioneers around the world had started to recognize this opportunity to use investment capital, you know, to put money into businesses that were having a positive social and environmental impact while also generating a financial return. In many ways, it's simple, but it's also incredibly challenging the traditional norms that we have, where you give money away to maximize impact and you invest money to maximize your private profit. Impact investments are investments made with the intention of generating a positive social or environmental impact alongside a financial return. And in many ways, the term itself was coined with two notions in mind. One was to actually unlock more private capital for impact. You know, the trillions of dollars that are being invested without even thinking about impact. And if we could start to channel some of that capital to things like affordable housing, sustainable agriculture, microfinance for the poor, access to clean energy, conservation, it could have a transformative effect on all of those issues on a global scale. The other purpose, of course, of that term, so not just unlocking capital for impact, was also to have an impact on investing. You know, can we actually influence the way that investments are done and the way we think about the purpose of capital? So it's not just about maximizing profit, but it's also about how we have a positive impact on people and the planet.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I recall that was the second part of the meeting 10 years ago, but nobody ever remembers that second part. They just remember the first. So give us a brief snapshot of the GIN, your organization, the Global Impact Investing Network. What do you do?
Well, we were started in 2009 with a small group of people with the aim of, you know, changing the way that investors around the world think about the role of their capital. Our mission is to increase the scale and effectiveness of impact investments. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, we are trying to drive more private investment capital to address social and environmental problems. We operate a network of investors around the world. It has over 250 organizations in 35 countries. It includes huge foundations, huge banks, small investment firms, some government agencies. It's a very diverse group of people who all believe in the potential for private investment capital to have a positive impact on the world.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, Amit. How central is intentionality around an impact investment? So, for instance, if I make an investment and it just so happens that it has a real positive social and environmental impact, a pleasant surprise, if you will, would you consider that to be an impact investment?
So we would not. We think intentions matter. And it doesn't discount the fact that hypothetical investment may have a positive impact on the world. But what we're working on in the GIN is we are engaging people who are committed from the outset to have a positive impact and will not only make an investment to achieve that impact, but will manage it all the way through to when they exit that investment, trying to figure out how they can sustain that company in a way that allows it to sustain its impact as well as its financial performance.
Do you have to meet a certain legal standard or threshold to be considered an impact investment, or can anyone just slap on a label to any old investment?
So we don't have a legal standard for it. Mm-hmm. And impact investing does take different shapes in different parts of the world. Our members are active on six continents, and it's incredible to see how much interest impact investing has generated, from everywhere from Australia to Nairobi to, Amsterdam and, of course, in the United States. One thing that I think is important, though, is that we have been trying to find this balance of how do we support innovation and creativity, not hold things too tightly, while also preserving the meaning and essence of what it actually means to be an impact investor. So we really emphasize the importance of measuring your impact and managing to that impact. And over time, I think we'll also be developing principles for impact investors, because it's really critical now at this stage of the market's growth to bring some more clarity to what it means to be an impact investor.
So to make this a little bit more real and tangible, could you give us an actual example or two of an impact investment?
Sure. I can give you a couple of examples. Last year, this is one that's far flung in terms of the distance from where we sit here today. But I was in Nairobi, and I've been there several times. It's one of the parts of the world where our members are most active in East Africa. And we flew into Nairobi and then drove 5 hours north into the plains, up at the foothills of the mountains. And what we found was a fascinating company that a number of our members had invested in. What it was doing was it was a technology company in many ways. It was providing solar-powered refrigeration systems for rural farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So these are farmers who are off the grid or are very far from a grid, and if they're on it, it's unreliable. So they can't actually count on a refrigerator run 24/7. Which means that they have everything that they gain in a day. So these are dairy farmers. So all the milk that they gather in one day, they have to sell that day. Otherwise, it's a complete loss.
Yeah.
Now, what this investment did is it created some refrigeration system for them to actually be able to, sustain this over the course of days. And it allowed them also to gain leverage with the buyers. Because essentially, a buyer could offer them anything, and they had no alternative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that was fascinating when we spoke to some of the farmers, we were asking what this business had done for them. And the first thing this farmer I spoke to, she said, was, "It gives me peace of mind." agriculture is
priceless.
High risk. You're subject to the weather and a lot of volatility. But the notion that this business, it was a startup, but this technology can give them peace of mind and allow them to have predictable pricing, allow them to get stability, allowed her to help support her kids through their education, and allowed her to have stability just for her own income, is incredibly powerful. And you think about this multiplying with different types of businesses all over the world, affects millions and millions of people. It's incredibly exciting, and we're just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, that's a great example. Well, let's switch back from the micro to the macro.
Sure.
How much capital is currently being deployed in impact investments?
Well, we don't actually know because it is a very relatively new market, and there are many people doing this who are not necessarily reporting what they're doing. But the best data that we have is an annual survey that we conduct, and we survey investors from around the world. Just about 200 investors participated in this last year's survey, and the capital the total assets under management from this collective group was $117 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that's not the full market, but we can at least consider that a floor. So the way I think about this is that it's big enough to matter, but we have a long ways to go in terms of the full potential of all the capital that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that there are many, many more investors that as they learn about the possibility of putting their money to work to make the world a better place, we will see this be kind of a tectonic shift in the way people think about how they invest their money.
We've had some guests on the show, Amit, who are fans of impact investing, but who've also said that the disparity between words spoken to deals done is troubling. Deals are just hard to come by. What do you think of that assessment?
Well, I think that it's absolutely fair to say that impact investing has generated a ton of energy and excitement, and at times it has absolutely outpaced the activity. And I do think that within reason, that's not a bad thing, because we're also trying to change the way people think about investing. And these are entrenched norms. Our systems are built to invest in a certain way that doesn't take into account the effect that investments have on people and the planet. So there, you know, in one sense, we do need a lot of excitement to start making people pay attention and starting to change the way that they think. But I'm a big believer in, you know, kind of substance over flash. That's my personal style. And so I, you know, we at the Gin are very much focused on, you know, a long game of building an actual industry, you know, that functions at great scale. You know, so, you know, an ordinary individual can think about the retirement savings in a way that's not just about how much money they have when they retire. But it's about shaping the world that they live in when they retire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is incredibly powerful. And we have a long ways to go to getting there. But it's important for us to really keep focused on not just the hype and the words, but the actual the deals and the projects that have, you know, that are kind of generating that track record of performance.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the ways you're trying to do that is that a while ago, the Gin launched an institutional investor initiative. Describe that for us and what you hope it will ultimately achieve.
Well, what we started to realize is that, you know, originally when we launched the Gin, you know, we just had over 20 members.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now we're about, you know, over 10 times that. But what we started to realize is that we were getting a lot of inbound interest from big mainstream institutions. And some of them aren't as well known by people because they're insurance companies and pension funds. They may not be household names unless if you actually buy insurance from them or have a pension with them. But they were starting to get interested in this as well. And I think a big motivation for this is actually the fact that they were starting to realize that, you know, social and environmental issues were important to the sustainability of the markets. You know, if you look around at the world today, there's a lot of troubling activity in terms of social unrest coming from inequality, you know, volatility in markets from climate change. And, you know, long-term investors realize that they need the markets to work in the long term. You know, they're not trying to make a quick buck.
Yeah.
And so if you're thinking about the long term, I think it's hard not to think about impact. And what we started to, you know, think about is that as these big institutions come in, we want them to do it well. You know, and, you know, there's room because there isn't a legal standard. There's room for people to do this differently. But we see potential in these large institutions. And we want we as the Gin really want to shape the way that they come into this market. So they are putting money to work that has, you know, a powerful impact, you know, on society
mm-hmm.
and on the environment while also meeting their really important financial obligations. You know, because pensioners are counting on pension funds to, you know, to make sure that they get their pensions when they retire.
Absolutely. And, I mean, if anybody's going to have a long view, it's going to be a pension fund.
Yes, exactly.
They'll be paying those things hopefully for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Well, I know there are institutional investors who are interested in impact investing, as you said, and they do want to have a social and environmental return on their investments, but maintain there's a scarcity of financial products to meet their needs and requirements. What products are missing?
Well, we actually – one of the things that's exciting, that in many ways, impact investing is coming of age. You know, you'd ask us about 10 years in,
mm-hmm.
You know, what's the state of the market? And it's really starting to, you know, develop into something that can play at a great scale on a global level. But with the growth of any new market, it's uneven. You know, and so there are pockets where we have – sometimes we have two, you know, business saying there aren't enough investors. Then they go talk to the investors and say, where are all the deals and where are the companies? And one of the things that we're starting to see is that for a lot of these larger investors, you know, they need investments at great scale. You know, so that story I told you about the company outside of Nairobi,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to end up in the portfolio of a pension fund anytime soon, most likely, because it's a small startup. You know, it's high risk, totally exciting, you know, but it's very early days. But what we do have now is actually a lot of, you know, as the market kind of 10 years in, has a lot of you know, opportunities available to larger investors, but they want more. And so I think one of the things that's really exciting about this moment in the market is that we're starting to see convergence between, you know, supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that we also have to think about developing the right types of products that can allow people to have a full portfolio of impact investments. So not just thinking about affordable housing, but thinking or microfinance, but a whole diversified strategy that goes from everything from, you know, loans that they may give out to venture capital and private equity and, you know, helps them build an entire portfolio focused on impact.
Got it. I'd be curious, what's the impact and the effect of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals that were set by the United Nations? They have a target date of 2030. Has that had an impact on the field?
It absolutely hasn't had an impact on the field, but I would say that impact is less felt in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
than it is in other parts of the world. You know, so these goals, they're big, they're audacious, you know,
and they sure are.
They're so important. And we've actually, one of the things that I'm pleasantly surprised to report is that in many ways we've seen, you know, kind of senior leadership of investment firms around the world feel a sense of obligation to participate in the, you know, achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals. Now, the opportunity that we see at the GIN and what we've been talking about very actively is that this should not just be seen as something that you do through corporate social responsibility, as important as that is, or your corporate foundation, which is also important. But we want this to be part of their investment strategy.
Sure.
And that actually has generated a lot of interest, you know, everywhere from, you know, Europe to Australia to Asia. And, you know, and we see that continuing to build. So I think it's incredibly promising for the field. And in many ways, the SDGs, you know, give a kind of a unified framework for people to connect to, which can be incredibly valuable for some. Not everyone needs that. But
yeah, it's a wonderful catalyst. There's no question about it. Are there certain economic conditions, market environments that are more favorable to impact investing, others that may be less so to the community, or are they really not that closely tethered?
Well, we've seen impact investing, you know, take different shapes in different markets around the world, but it has been something that there's a way that it can show up and be present in a variety of conditions.
Mm.
You know, when I mentioned that we launched in 2009. And, you know, of course, you're sitting here in New York or anywhere in the world for that matter. You know, that was a very tumultuous time.
Sure, especially down here on Wall Street where we're at right now.
Absolutely. And you know, we often wondered, you know, what would the things have been like if we hadn't had the financial crisis for impact investing? And I actually, you know, it's interesting because this market really grew up in the kind of the aftermath of the crisis. And as the markets, you know, as the economy globally has strengthened, you know, impact investing has continued to grow. But it has in many ways, you know, some investors actually claim that it's, you know, non-correlated with the markets, which means that when the markets go bad, impact investments don't necessarily go in the same direction. We don't have enough data to actually say that definitively, but we have seen impact investing grow in a variety of geographies that are all experiencing different conditions at any given time.
So a question, Amit, I suspect on most people's mind, what are the financial returns of impact investments compared to the overall market? Yeah. Competitive, or do you have to give up a little?
So the answer is that is both. and the reason why.
A politician here.
Yeah, well, the reason why is that there are a variety of investment strategies included that range from, you know, just getting your principal back. You know, so if I put money in, I get that same amount out. To those that actually are, you know, achieving, you know, competitive rates of return.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a, you know, I think a, you know, and sometimes unconstructive debate about which one of those approaches is correct or which one is right. And our view is that they all serve a role in the market. And I'll explain what I mean. There are certain impact investment opportunities that are just more, you know, financially lucrative. You know, and those are the ones that mainstream financial institutions will probably put their money into because it has a demonstrated track record. As I mentioned, any pension manager wants to make sure they can pay their pensioners in 30 years. And that's their job. And there are also a whole variety of business models that are financially sustainable, may not be that lucrative, but can provide an opportunity for you to make an investment and get paid back and then some, but may not be, you know, equivalent to what you get in the commercial markets. Now, our view is that all those models play a great role in the market, but different investors will be seeking different opportunities. You know, so oftentimes, philanthropic foundations are open to below market rates of return.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of big mainstream financial institutions are not. Yeah. And individuals run the spectrum. That
right.
really depends on personal preferences and how they're thinking about their money.
Sure. You're going to have the impact first investors. You're going to have the finance first investors.
Right.
And it seems like those philanthropic ones want to get a proof of concept.
Right.
Hopefully to show that this is a good market and then have the private investors come in and follow suit to really make a difference.
Well, and that's something that's really exciting about this market is that, you know, some of these are it's really capitalizing innovation.
Yeah.
And the innovation is not channeled on just making things more convenient for people in, you know, in wealthy markets, but on serving the needs of the poor and figuring out different ways to, you know, to really, you know, protect and preserve the environment. And some of that innovation, you know, does require, you know, more flexible investors. But over time, you know, if those models are proven, they can achieve much greater scale and then crowd in vast sums of capital.
You know, I know one of the most difficult things in the nonprofit sector to do is to measure impact, not just output, but outcomes. So I can imagine the challenge it is in impact investing to measure the social environmental return on these investments. Tell us where we are in managing and measuring that impact.
I think this is a time of great progress, but it is something that will be an ongoing journey for us, and we are getting a lot more sophisticated about how we think about measuring and managing to impact. When the GIN was started, one of our initial programs was to create a catalog of metrics,
right?
Just the definitions that you use when you're thinking
taxonomy.
About
taxonomy.
Exactly. It was called IRIS, and it's still up and running, and it's used by majority of impact investors. But it's a catalog of metrics, for defining social, environmental, and financial performance. But then it's also not just about what you're counting, but how you use it. And one thing that's been an exciting evolution over the course of the past 10 years is that a lot of the conversation in the early days was around impact measurement. It was driven by those impact investors that are nonprofits and foundations and potentially development agencies. And now we're getting a lot of interest in pushing the frontier of impact measurement from large financial institutions. The thing that's in our favor here is that investors are a data-driven group.
Yeah, right.
They like data. They like to manage it. There's always a risk of oversimplifying very complex things when it comes to impact. But we're seeing a great demand for data from investors around things like, the greenhouse gas emissions of investments. What are the customers like? What's their poverty level? What kind of progress are we seeing in their livelihoods? And that's something that there's a wealth of kind of ideas, a lot of progress, a lot of innovation. And we at the GIN think this is essential to building this market.
Are they also measuring, by and large, the negative impact of their investments and not just the positive?
So that's some are. Mm-hmm. And I think increasingly, what we found in many ways is that the responsible investing movement, at least initially, had a great focus on managing the negative elements of an investment.
Right.
So greenhouse gas emissions or other types of things. And impact investors are motivated by capitalizing solutions. So how do we actually put money to work to solve problems and not just to avoid harm?
Mm-hmm.
I think now we're in a moment, though, where there's some convergence because people are starting to realize that you can't just do one without the other if you're really trying to solve problems at scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are now starting to see many more impact investors think about the positive and the negative. And it's not easy to get your head around all these different elements of a business while trying to do your day job.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important for people to realize that this is part of your day job.
Yeah, that's right. And it's also encouraging to see how many of them are beginning to report on these measurements and the impact they've had, both positive and negative. What are you seeing from the philanthropic community with regard to moving away from grants, whether it be individuals or foundations, and toward impact investments?
Well, we've seen a lot of interest in impact investing from the philanthropic community globally. But my hope is that it's not viewed as a moving away from grants to impact investments, because I'm a firm believer in the role of philanthropy as a scarce and precious resource for tackling problems that aren't addressed by government and aren't addressed by the markets. But my hope is that whether it's individuals or big foundations, when you think about impact investments, it's as a complement to your philanthropy. So give as much as you can give.
Yep.
Everyone sets that that for themselves. But how can you engage your investment capital to achieve your objectives from a social and environmental standpoint?
Mm-hmm.
So if you care about the climate, and you're donating to environmental nonprofits, you can also invest in a way that helps achieve that objective of mitigating climate change.
Yeah, they're all jumping on board, it seems. I mean, F.B. Heron obviously has done 100%. I saw Ford has done $1 billion. So it really is beginning to pick up momentum, particularly with foundations.
Absolutely. And foundations play a critical role in this market because one of the things I love about our network is the diversity.
Mm-hmm.
We have foundations, people who wake up every day trying to think about social problems, and some of them historically were not thinking about markets or returns. And then we have people who wake up every day thinking about markets and returns, and we put them all together. But one of the roles that foundations and philanthropists play, is bringing that deep knowledge and expertise about how social and environmental problems work, and their complexity, and where investments can play a catalytic role.
Mm-hmm.
And helping to address them.
The GIN and your 250 members, you're really at the very heart of this impact investing movement. And as this field evolves and develops, your organization needs to do so as well to remain relevant and to remain effective. How are you changing?
We've changed a lot, and I think it's exciting. It's not always easy.
Yeah, sure.
and we also operate on a global basis. So we have a need to have a fluency of engaging with wealthy individuals, philanthropic foundations, governments, large financial institutions all around the world, across continents and working on very different issues. And so one of the things that I love about our work is that it forces us to constantly adapt and evolve. One thing that's essential to running a network is the ability to listen, to identify patterns, to synthesize, to integrate, and also to it forces a reflection on how we need to be different. One of the big transitions we made is in the early days, we're really focused on, just bring definition to impact investing,
mm-hmm.
trying to help people understand the concept. We called it the focus on the what of impact investing. We started to realize as people got excited, we wanted to make sure that interest got converted to action
mm-hmm.
and to impact ultimately. So we had to evolve to really focus on the how of impact investing. So great, I want to do this. How do I get started? And now we're at a moment where I think we're continuing to serve the core impact investment community. But one of the big adaptations we're making now is, how do we influence all the investors who are not impact investors? And that could be an individual, of modest means who's just thinking about their retirement or where they put their savings. Is it a community bank that lends to, businesses serving low-income people?
Yeah.
Or it can be the wealthiest institutions in the world. But everyone has a role to play in changing the way that the capital markets work and driving more capital to address social and environmental problems.
It's changing mindsets.
Yes, exactly.
Sticking with your organization for a minute, tell us about the work culture at the GIN and specifically what you, Amit, do as a CEO to help shape and influence the corporate culture.
Well, I love our organization. I think it's absolutely
you co-founded it. I would think you probably do.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that
your baby.
Mm-hmm. And I treasure the opportunity to work with the people that are my colleagues at the GIN, and I think it's I hold great responsibility for myself in shaping an environment where they can feel a great deal of purpose in their lives, because I think that's often missing for people in their professional lives, unfortunately, where they can learn and grow as individuals, and of course where we can have a great impact and achieve our mission. So we have values that are very important to us, and I think as CEO, it's important for me to do my best to model those values. And part of what I think is really important is a real commitment to reflection, because as we evolve, I need to evolve, and the goal of the GIN is to try to stay ahead of the market and play a leadership role. So that means all the people at the GIN need to stay sharp and think about where this market needs to go, which means that we have to try to see things before they're apparent to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have our eyes open, we have to have our ears open, and we have to stay true to the passion we have for our work.
Let me close with this, Amit. One of the great hopes placed in impact investing, the potential promise it holds, is the deployment of these huge amounts of capital that can really address the root causes of issues like hunger and poverty and inequality and climate degradation. And I believe that to successfully meet these sustainable development goals that we talked about a little bit earlier by 2030, we need a couple $1 trillion, much of that coming from impact investments. So the question for you is, how realistic do you think this is? And what do you think is actually possible over the course of the next dozen years?
Well, I think that the Sustainable Development Goals are so important as this kind of global signposts for where we need to go. And as I mentioned before, they're incredibly massive in ambition,
mm-hmm.
But they really get at addressing the root challenges that we're facing, and standing between us and sustainable development of the world. I think we have a long ways to go. I do worry that things are not moving fast enough. I say that with, unfortunately, a lot of certainty. And, the way that we see our role is really trying to influence all those people who are not yet committed to impact investment as a lever for progress towards achieving the SDGs. I think we have a ton of work, and so I don't say that lightly. But I think it is something that we are at a moment, though, of opportunity. And I say that while recognizing the fact that this doesn't feel like the best time in the world when you think about the social unrest and inequality and climate change. There's a lot of things to be troubled by at this moment.
Yeah.
But my hope is that it's energizing people to think about things differently and think about what's their role in creating the world that they want to live in. And we want to be one of the ways that we can channel that energy and that motivation to move more capital to impact investments and ultimately to benefit people around the world and the planet. So I think the challenge is daunting. We've got some strong tailwinds, luckily, but it is going to be something that for this to really work, every person needs to see their role in part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, the urgency is definitely there, and I sense it. Well, Amit Bori, the co-founder and CEO of the GIN, the Global Impact Investing Network, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. So if people are interested in learning more about this field, or maybe they've been listening to you and say, hey, I want to get involved in some impact investing, what's on your website that will be helpful to them?
Well, we have a wealth of research on impact investing. We have the metrics that I mentioned, IRIS is available, and we have case studies on investors and a lot of the press and media covering impact investment. So it's a great kind of hub of information. You can find it at thegin.org, and the GIN has two I's for impact investing. We also, you can follow us on Twitter, and we're at thegin, and you can follow me at Twitter, at Amit K. Bori.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Amit. It was a real pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be here. I really appreciate it.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.